Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'll remind you on our way to this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. 1-800-638-7781 is the number. If you are a first or second time home buyer looking for a home in Baltimore, they have assistance with down payments in big quantities and more. So the Maryland Mortgage Program, 1-800-638-7781. Let's fill the city up. So we're going to go from particle physics and the discovery of Higgs boson to what makes our city work better. Both important subjects, and we're coming back down to our own community here in very direct ways. Hassan Giordano is back in the studio, writes for the Baltimore Examiner, host of Reporters Roundtable. Joining us by phone is Councilman Bill Henry, who represents the 4th District. The people are so excited they came. The people writing emails already asked constituent questions that we'll try to get to as well. So, Bill, welcome, and Hassan, welcome.
Thanks for having us, Mark. And let me tell you, if any of those calls or excited emails are about restoring power to different parts of the 4th District, I'm well aware that we appear to be one of the worst hit.
That's, yeah, the places are still out. Well, it's down. It's 30,000 houses now, I think.
Yeah. Less than that. Less than that. But a fair number of them are concentrated in north central Baltimore.
They are. Some of the right. We should remind folks some of the wealthiest neighborhoods, the ones that are not on.
He was the first one I texted. He's my councilman. Hey, what's up with the electric? I ain't got it either. So.
And what did I say? I said it's probably going to be almost next weekend, and that looks like where we're going to get.
Right. Just in time for 104-degree temperature, maybe more violent thunderstorms. Thank you, climate change. Anyway, 410-319-8888. We'll do that another day. It's a number here. I brought you both here for a simple reason, since it's a shorter segment, but we'll come back to these in large ways over the coming months. You both have proposed charter amendment ideas, and they would really change the nature of how we do politics in this town, how the democratic process runs in this town. And I think they're really important just to outline for our listeners. And folks, you can join us as you hear them at 410-319-8888. And I promise, Kay, I will give this question for Bill Henry. It's a constituent question. Before we end this, we'll throw that question out to Bill. But I want to start with this because where we began. So let me start, Hassan, because we got your email last week, and Bill and I talked today. And he was originally going to come on the show because we were going to have a debate between members of the 9 and 6, I call them. The 9 have voted yes on the mayor's budget, and the 6 have voted no. So far, we've only been able to get the no's on. So we're waiting to get the yeses on so we can get the no's back with them to talk about the yes, no. So
I can't wait for that show.
So, Hassan. Me too. Hassan, talk a bit about the email you sent and these particular amendments you're talking about.
Well, and thank you so much for doing this, because unfortunately and fortunately, I guess, these issues are going to be overshadowed by the polarizing issues of gay marriage and the DREAM Act in November. But we have very local issues that are going to affect Maryland and especially Baltimore City residents. The first one, obviously, is one that the city council had no control over, even though the mayor was the only one who actually supported moving the city elections to the presidential cycle. All the community associations from the League of Women Voters, CPHA, NAACP, supported moving it to the gubernatorial. But their process was give them the term, the 4 years that the voters gave them last year, and then we'll move it after 2015. And I think that's one of the bigger issues, is that it's going to be moved. Let's put it this, the primary has been moved. So what happens is the legislature has the control to move our primaries, but only the voters can move the general. That's what gave us the 14-month lame duck last time in 2003, 2004, is that we moved it too quick in the city, and then Mike Miller and them said, we're not moving it. Well, this time it was the opposite. And I think that voters are a little discouraged about this. You know, you're getting 5 years, and we can name a whole list of arguments, but that's one issue. And then the second issue was, it was our bill that would allow 50,000 residents of this city, voters, independents and third party voters, to be appointed to local boards and commissions. Right now, they do it, you know, the majority party has the majority of the seats, and then the minority party, which has always been considered Republicans, get the minority of the seats, one or two seats on commissions and boards. And unfortunately, independents, we outnumber Republicans in the city, as well as in Montgomery County. And so we're fast
growing. By how much registered independents outnumber Republicans, you know?
By considerable amount in Baltimore City. We're 41,000 at this point. And with Green Party and Third Party, we're up to 50,000. Registered Republicans, I think at the last time, we were about 29,000, somewhere around there. But don't quote me on that. That was the last statistic I saw. But needless to say, so what Mary Pat Clark and Bill Henry and the rest of the council said is, you know what, that is an antiquated law. So what we're going to do is say anybody who is not a part of the majority party gets the right to be appointed to these very critical boards and commissions in the city of Baltimore. So that means Republicans as well as Green Party members, Constitutional Party, and independents. And I think it's just that's a fairness issue. Just like last year, we lowered the age to 18 to run for office. That was a fairness thing. It was you want young people involved, but they can't run till they're 21, which made absolutely no sense.
So let me talk to you, folks. Join us here. I want to get your thoughts on this as you hear this. 410-319-8888. I mean, the idea of where the next mayoral election should take place. So Bill Henry, what do you stand on that?
Yeah, actually, I welcome the chance to get to speak to this, but I've only gotten the chance to talk to people individually on it. I actually support the idea of moving it to the presidential election, whether we move it immediately or wait until the current term runs out and in 2015 those people would be elected to a five-year term so that it would sync up with the presidential. That, to me, I mean, the only difference is that if we go through another time of having our own election just for these purposes, it's going to be another couple million dollars wasted that could be spent on other things. But philosophically, I understand where the activists who are unhappy changing in the middle of the term, I understand where they're coming from. I'll point out, though, that as Hassan said, we already did this one. I mean, in 1999, people were elected to what they thought was going to be a four-year term. And then in the middle of that term, we changed the charter and essentially extended their term to 5 years. And frankly, I don't remember hearing anywhere near this level of complaining then for doing it then. And while I'm not sure if I want to wade into this, it may have been that at that point people were happier with the mayor and city council than they are right now.
Well, no, because back then, though, you got to understand the voters approved that one back in 99, 2000.
I hear what you're saying.
Right.
But that's, we're looking at it after the fact. Mm-hmm. The council had to approve the actual putting it on the ballot, which is what has just happened. If the people approve it, if the citizens as a whole approve it in November, then the people approve it. I mean, that's right. One of the reasons why I've been saying the council is not making, you know, the council is not changing it so that they have a five-year term.
Right.
The council is putting it on the ballot so that people get to vote.
Well, and they have to.
Which is the same place that we were back in 99. The council put it on the, I'm sorry, not 99, it was later, one of the, it's 2000 or 2002. But it was, the council put it on the ballot, and the people voted to do it. And at that time, the people evidently had no major qualms with giving the people who were in right then and there an extra year of a term if what they were going to get out of it was a couple million dollars to be spent on other stuff.
But the legislature stopped that, though. See, that's
and according to the statement I saw the other day from the Attorney General's office, the legislature may have already stopped it this time. In terms of the Attorney General spokesperson is saying that it kind of doesn't matter what we say whether or not we move it, because the legislature did act.
What kind of message does that send to the voters? That it doesn't matter what the voters say. It just matters what the politicians say. And that's the problem that we're having.
I'll tell you exactly what message it sends. The message it sends is that every single bit of our power in Baltimore City derives from state government giving us the power to govern ourselves. And that's why they are able to do stuff all the time that the city can't undo.
But so, I don't agree with that opinion. I think that should be challenged. Like she said, it's never been done, so it's unprecedented. But I don't think that that'll – I think that we'll have an election. If it doesn't, if the voters vote it down, I think we'll have a general election before we have a primary election.
If we do – here's what will happen is we're going to have – it's going to go on the ballot, and we're going to get to all vote on it.
Right.
If the voters of Baltimore City reject it and say, we don't want you guys to move to the presidential right away, then you'll have to see what happens. Then there'll be two possibilities. One is the General Assembly may decide at their next session, all right, fine, you guys don't want to go, you don't want to go with the presidential, fine. They may move to the gubernatorial. They may just say, a plague on you. If you didn't want to take the offer we gave you, you go back to just keeping your own election and spending your own money. They may do that. Or they may say, well, you know what? We already said you're moving to the presidential, and then we will have a court case.
So other than, and then I'm going to move on to some of the things, I'll come back to this as well, but I want Bill to describe the amendments he's talking about that we need to have in the city.
But Mark, what I'd like to do is I'd like to take a minute to talk about what is the good side of moving to the presidential.
Well, that's the question I was about to ask. The question I was going to ask both of you, and you can start, Bill, and then go to Hassan. What difference does it make, really?
Moving to the presidential as opposed to the gubernatorial, whether it is in 2016 or in 2020, is significantly better for Baltimore City, for the city elected officials to be elected on an off year from the state one. And here's why. There are already 20-some offices on the ballot at the gubernatorial cycle. People are not paying attention to all of them already. It's to say that more people come out and vote in the gubernatorial than in the presidential, that's nice. But more people coming out and voting and not paying any attention to who they vote for is not necessarily the thing that we should be trying to get to.
But that's why they changed it, because they wanted more turnout. It's still cost-effective in the gubernatorial. And to say that the voters of Baltimore aren't as educated as the other 23 counties who already do this is a slap in the face to the voters of Baltimore City. I think they're educated enough.
Hang on. Nobody said anything about educated. I said pay attention. There's a difference between whether or not you're educated and whether or not you're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
When there are 20-some things to vote for, people don't necessarily pay attention to all of them. I'm not saying that they do in the counties. I think that the counties are doing it rather stupidly, to be honest, to mix theirs up. But it's not my job to make sure their governments run better.
Well, I mean,
it's my job to make sure that Baltimore City runs as well as it can.
So in that regard,
I got to tell you that if you've got to focus people's attention on the best candidates for mayor, city council president, comptroller, and their district council person, I want people paying attention to those candidates, and I don't want them distracted by register of will.
Well, but see, it's easy for an incumbent to say that, because in a presidential, the challengers have to run in a winter months. It's in April. The presidential primary just passed. We had 14% turnout. That was even less than our dismal turnout last year. The turnout is going to be greater. The cost effectiveness is the same whether you move to the gubernatorial or the presidential.
But nobody voted in the presidential primary because there was no primary.
Right, but we're going to have that all. You're going to have that at least every 8 years when you have an incumbent president.
In
the past 20 years, Mark, it's never been higher in the presidential primaries.
Sometimes I wonder what people. I'm going to go to the phone to have these questions. People coming in with us, but what I'm confused about is that, I mean, when you look at elections that have taken place in the past,
mm-hmm.
The votes for, let's say, House of Delegate members or State Senate members are so far below the numbers of people that vote for governor.
Right.
So would it make – I guess just I'm not trying to make an argument for Bill's argument. I just want to throw the question out. Does it make sense to put the governor's – the mayor's race and add it into that when people are focused on the president and not on other things. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if it's focus on the governor and not other things. I mean, so it gets lost in the jumble. One of the arguments that could be made is that if it's a presidential election cycle, then you have the president and the mayor and the city council, there may be more chance of people focusing on those two races as opposed to trying to focus on dozens of races happening at one time.
But see, I live by the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. Now, but if voters realize this is the election I elect my governor and all my local and state officials, and then this is the election I elect my president and all my federal officials, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you alleviate the problem from mayors jumping up to run for governor and vice versa. This takes away that entire thing. And then you also have a 7.5 month lame duck period in the presidential cycle, as opposed to only 4 months that we'll have because it's about to turn into June. The last week of June will be the primaries and the gubernatorial start in 2014. So you'll have about a 4.5 month lame duck period. There's a lot of differences between the two.
Well, if I could just say one little bit, the other part of the argument that I've been hearing that I've questioned is people. I keep hearing people say that it's a bad thing for I'll say mayors to be able to run for governor or state senators to be able to run for mayor or council people to be able to run for state senate without risking their seats. I keep hearing people say that that's a bad thing. But here's what I ask. I work from the assumption that what people are looking for is they're looking for a measure of turnover, that it would be nice to not see the same people just sitting in the same seats for, you know, year after year. And when I look at the counties where they run all at the same time, I see a lot of cases where people just sit tight and there isn't a lot of turnover because they don't have that chance of running for something else without risking their current seat. So they don't run for something else and they don't risk their current seat and they just keep getting elected. If you look at Baltimore County's council last term, I think they had one returning member because five of them left after 20 years. Well, actually, two of them both ran. Right. Two of them after 20 years ran for county executive, and the other four just retired.
We have any such luck in the city, though.
Wait, what was that?
We never have any such luck in the city.
we can address that when we get to my charter.
Yeah, let me get a call in here because I want to talk about your two ideas that I think are really important about the budget, and Hassan's more important to it. So when it gets all of them, mm-hmm. to the budget and to your idea about term limits. We need to get to what Bill Henry's suggesting here. Let's go first though to D in Columbia. You're on the air.
Let me give a little clarity and a little charity here regarding House Bill, I think it was 1119, which I'm sure was introduced since 2003 by Delegate Carter. I'm clear that the governor clearly does not want Baltimore City elections lined up with the other 23 jurisdictions in the state of Maryland. It only makes common sense. But, you know, Baltimore City seems to have lost its common sense when it comes to the Democratic Party or those who are hijacking, from my perspective, the policies and the values and the principles of the Democratic Party. That this is not democracy when you have all of the other jurisdictions have their elections lined up with the President of the United States, except Baltimore. And it's no different than the other day when you were discussing the budget and audits. No other jurisdiction, every other jurisdiction does audits except the city of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So, again, I'd ask the question, why isn't it the governor does not want, Governor Martin O'Malley does not want Baltimore City election lined up with the rest of the state? So, clearly, if this is democracy and he's representing democracy every Sunday morning on these Sunday morning talk shows, then why don't he talk about the fact that as a governor, he could line Baltimore City up because whatever he wants, the legislators, of course, will make sure that it passes. So, again, this goes to the governor. It goes to the head. And I think that we're placating the public, not saying that the problem is that the governor does not want it.
I hear you. I think he may not want it.
To become a reality in Baltimore City, we should have the...
I hear what you're
saying. And it makes sense. Thank you.
Okay,
and,
thanks, D.
And Mark, and that's part of the problem. Like, the voters, whatever they vote this time, that's what the voters want, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, when you looked at the session, when Delegate Carter introduced this bill, and she's been doing it since she's a freshman, You had every community association you can think about in the city saying, we want the gubernatorial. You had one person in support of presidential. That was the mayor on behalf of the city council. You would think that they would go with the community associations that represent the actual voters. And they decided, you know what? You gave us data that showed that gubernatorial is better than presidential. Well, but we're still not. So, we're going to ignore that. And we're going to go with our own will.
Let me say one last thing about that, though, because that's another thing that I've heard more than once, that, quote unquote, all of or all these or so many of these citizen-based organizations all supported the gubernatorial, and only the mayor went down there and supported the presidential. I got to tell you, speaking for myself, I was a little disappointed to find that in at least two cases, organizations that I work with voted to endorse the gubernatorial selection over the presidential one without any like reaching out to their members or any attempt to bring in somebody to articulate the other side of the issue. In each case, the organization heard from somebody who said, we're supporting moving it to the gubernatorial. Will you sign on? And they talked about it amongst themselves and decided to sign on without anybody who could make the case for the presidential coming in and talking to them.
Well, how much outreach did the mayor and the city council do to the constituents about moving this? None. The community didn't even know about it until we started making an issue about it.
Well, I'm not sure they even know about it now, but I mean, but thank God for your shows.
I agree with Dean. This is all about democracy. Hassan and I can sit here and we can talk about our individual opinions for this, but at the end of the day, the people are going to get to vote on it in November, and that's probably the best way to handle something that's important.
So, Bill, before we get to Will and Pete, our next two callers up. Describe the two things you're pushing as amendments, charter amendments.
I have three different kinds of charter amendments coming out at the July meeting. Process reform, council reform, and term limits for all city elected officials. The process reform is going to be in two parts. One is, I think we need to rewrite Article 6 of the charter so that the council can legally reappropriate funds during the budget process. I found it extraordinarily frustrating this year, as has been the case in the past, but even more so this year, to have colleagues who agreed on what needed to be done and were willing to make difficult but important cuts to the mayor's budget so that we could reappropriate funds to uses that we all agreed on. But then, when it became clear that the mayor was not going to cooperate and the mayor was not going to come to the table and put in any type of supplemental appropriation, which right now the charter requires must come in only upon the recommendation of the Board of Estimates that the mayor controls. I get the idea that we have a strong mayor system.
Right.
But I think that in some ways it's too strong. And I mean, I've been looking around at other forms of governance around the country, looking at strong mayor, strong governor systems, and I think we may have gone too far down that axis. So the first part is to let the council legally reappropriate funds during the budget process. The second part of that is to reduce the number of votes needed to overturn a mayor's veto. Right now, it requires 3/4 of the council, that's 12 out of 15 members, to overturn a mayor's veto. There, I could not find anywhere else in America that required such a high number.
So what number are you suggesting?
Most people do 2/3. And basically what that means is all the mayor has to do is hold 6 votes on a 15-person council to sustain a veto if we get to that part.
Well, she got that with her gang of 8.
Realistically, there's no point right now because no one will ever expect to get 12 out of the 15.
Oh, so and go through your other two bills. I want to get back to the phones and have a chance to outline them because we don't have a lot of time.
So those that's the process reform. Council reform, I would like to see the council reduced in size. I think that one of the things that makes the strong mayor system of government even stronger is having 14 single-member districts, which means each council person has a relatively small base of the vote for the mayor to respect in terms of any type of significant political controversy. And so I'm going to suggest that we reduce the council down to 6 single-member districts and add 2 at-large members along with the at-large president for a total council size of 9.
Okay.
And then finally, I'm going to introduce term limits and ask that all the citywide elected officials would be limited to 2 consecutive terms, and the single district council members would be limited to 3. And the rationale is that the individual council members are usually new to elected government, whereas citywide elected officials usually have already spent 2 or more terms in the council.
Well, can you reduce the number of the Board of Estimates? That needs to be a city charter.
To three.
The three elected people.
Hassan, I wrestled with that. I did. Here's the thing. The Board of Estimates is really the heart of the strong mayor system of government.
Well, then why would you reduce it to 3?
And if you reduce it to three, the assumption is you take off the 2 appointed members, the
right.
solicitor and the director of public works, so that the mayor does not have
right.
Automatic
so why wouldn't you do that?
Because that is what makes it a strong mayor system. If you do that, it's not strong mayor anymore.
And we don't want it.
But hold on. There's a question of whether or not. If you're going to question whether you want strong mayor or council manager or weak mayor, there's a couple different ways you can look at it. But I will tell you this, the one good thing that even as a council person who is often frustrated, the one good thing about a strong mayor system of government is there is never any doubt where accountability should lie. The mayor.
Yeah, but you also have a system. Yeah, but that doesn't. But right now it means that with all these contracts that are never looked at by anybody, billions of dollars going out, hundreds of millions of dollars going out, just get kind of passed through because there's no opposition because she knows she can't lose the vote or he can't lose the vote, whoever that is.
Right.
I'm not saying nobody else can put it in. and
I just somebody, never get passed.
And if somebody else wants to put it in, I could probably be convinced to vote for it. I thought it was a good idea 5 years ago.
All right. Well, let me do this. Let me go back to the phones, get some of our listeners here before the end of the hour and get this question directly for you, Bill, that came in over the transom. Will in Northwest, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. It's Will Hanna.
Hi, Will.
Hey, Will.
Hey. Hey, I had Councilman Henry. I just wanted to say good afternoon to you. But the issue, I think, with the with moving the election to the presidential, the problem I think that a lot of people have is with the intent of what it was to do, is to increase voter turnout was one. And there's no numbers ever that support that. There's no numbers that support that. And
there's no numbers that support more people voting.
There's no numbers that support that more. There's a higher voter turnout at the presidential election.
No. But what the numbers show is that even if there's a high voter turnout for gubernatorial elections, there's still a low voter participation in voting for all the lesser offices during a gubernatorial race.
Well, actually, I would question the first premise, Mark. Well, I'm sorry to disagree with you, but I'm pretty sure that I've seen numbers showing that more voters turn out for presidential elections than for solely municipal one.
No. And the gubernatorial primaries have always, for the past 20 years, have been more than the presidential primaries.
It's the general elections.
I hear you saying. Okay.
Right.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Presidential is better than gubernatorial, not necessarily because more people vote at presidential than at gubernatorial. More people vote at presidential than at municipal alone. So you are improving the number of people who are voting.
But
here's the important part. You're continuing to leave a more significant amount of the attention on the municipal elections. When there was a group, the last gubernatorial election, 2010, I was following this, and I complained even at one point to a friend of mine who's a reporter at The Sun that they did one story on the Senate race for my district. And that was when all they had to worry about were the gubernatorial race and the Senate and delegate races. And they were also covering a mayor's race and a council president's race and council district races, how much attention are we going to get to each thing?
But you see, Bill,
it's better to have it as a presidential where we don't have to compete with all the other people who are already running for state office for the same amount of the voters' attention.
Okay, see, what I'm saying, part of the problem is, Bill, even this conversation, I think we're making the entire issue too complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, making this issue so complex makes people not care and want to go to sleep.
Well, that's what they want to do. They want
to
make
it. You know what I'm saying? You've got to. So the question is, I mean, I think it's very simple it either means what would happen was very simply put up to people to be able to vote that our elections should be in the gubernatorial cycle or the presidential cycle. And just make it very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because people can make arguments on both sides about whether. You know that there'll be less participation in the gubernatorial election. I mean, because people do not vote for House of Delegates and State Senate. They just don't. They don't come out for it at all. It's almost like the people don't care about this, or how low the voter turnout is during our off-year mayoral elections. Do you think it's a matter of when people are voting, or do you think it's a matter of people just not seeing a reason to vote?
I think what happens in presidential years and in gubernatorial years is I think that those national and statewide campaigns spend a ridiculous amount of money trying to get people to come out and vote. And they spend even more money than mayoral candidates or city council candidates or delegate candidates or state senatorial candidates are going to spend.
So let me. We only have about 4 minutes left here, in this segment, and let me just get to another caller real fast and come back for a question. Peter, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Peter.
This is Peter. I used to live in Baltimore City and work for city government. I don't live there anymore, but I follow this issue a great deal. And for disclosure's sake, I know Councilman Henry and generally have been supportive. I agree generally with the councilman's arguments for the presidential cycle over the gubernatorial cycle. What particularly concerns me is how long will it take for a senior citizen or anybody to complete a ballot if there is now all of those offices at the same time?
Yeah.
I think there needs to be some study by the Board of Elections to figure out how long it's going to take per voter to complete the ballot, if they are going to complete the ballot. And secondly, I'm concerned about the fact that it will just create these massive vertical slate that all of the incumbents are just going to band together, which they already do to some extent in the individual elections. There's only so much airtime on the radio and only so many radio stations. And so they're just going to pool their resources and saturate as a ticket and make it harder for challengers to get their message out, not even get on the ticket, let alone. I just think that it already is happening in the gubernatorial cycle to begin with. But now you're going to add the 17, 18 offices for the municipal elections into that. It's just going to be one massive ticket that's going to drown out.
I'm going to jump in here. We only have 2 minutes left. I want to let Hassan get a word in real quick on that. And then
I see his point of view, but you got to understand, as a challenger, if you've ever run an election, do you know how hard it is to campaign in the wintertime? This is what you would do in the presidential. And so I understand your point that incumbents are always going to stick together, and I understand that. But for a challenger would rather a gubernatorial than they would a presidential based off of the season, based off the lame duck process and everything else under the sun. But I understand his point valid, and I think you're right, Mark. At the end of the day, it's going to be up to the voters in November. That's why these shows are so important, to educate them, because the mayor and the council did not do a job of educating the people that they were getting an extra year.
So very quickly, Bill, and you probably have no time to answer this, but I know you don't have no time to answer this, if I can even find where I put the question that someone just sent in. Wait a second. I was right here 2 seconds ago. That's what I got for changing my screen. Where is the question? The question was, that's not good, Mark, when you lose questions from your listeners who really want to ask a question to their council person. I have to get you back here and answer the question. Basically, the question was from Gay Pinder, if I remember reading it right, was what does Bill Henry intend to do about all the crime and grime up and down York Road?
Well, first of all, the mayor has promised to hire a new police commissioner. But seriously, I actually am working with the York Road Partnership and the Govanstown Business Association. We are trying to come up with a way of dealing with the trash on York Road, which has gotten worse. The city used to have hokey guys and women who literally cleaned by hand. That has been phased out. We are supposed to start getting automated sidewalk sweepers, and they're essentially big vacuum cleaners that somebody rides down the sidewalk and on the street. But we don't know how often we're going to get them. But I think it's clear that there's going to need to be some additional street sweeping and sidewalk sweeping, and I'm hoping that the business people will join with the community to help us come up with the resources to make that happen.
Her exact question was, and I apologize, Gay, because we couldn't get it until very late since we have to roll now, but her question was, I'm going to miss today's show, Bill Henry, what's he going to do about York Road Corridor? I've witnessed drug deals. It's filthy with trash. There are always groups of men loitering. There was a murder at York and Cold Spring just a few weeks ago. It's a mess. There used to be a large police presence. Now there's not. Will we ever have beat cops in this area? What's his plan? That was the question. I apologize for not getting the question earlier.
That's okay. And the answer is that Northern District probably will never be able to provide on-the-street beat cops everywhere in the district all at the same time, but they try to move around the resources they have to hit the hard-hit spots. And I am seeing cops on York Road. I'm sorry if they're not seeing them where they're looking, and they should call me at my office at 410-396-4830 so that we can talk about this further.
Councilman Bill Henry, 4th District, Hassan Giordano, host of Reporters Roundtable and writer for Baltimore's Independent Examiner. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mark.
We stay tuned. We're going to go to traffic. And when we come back from traffic, we will be going to our look at what's happening in the future of our agricultural system. We talk to another African-American scientist about the dangerous thing of atrazine and then talk to Winona LaDuke as well. So stay with us.